What a Saint Stands For by Papa Ram Dass. The aim of a saint's life is to spend all its energies, physical, mental, and spiritual, for the welfare of humanity. The struggling and distressed souls call for his sympathy, goodwill, and help. He is by nature all kindness, mercy, and love. So at every step, his life is poured out as a selfless dedication for the removal of pain and misery in the world, in whatsoever form they exist. Blessed are they who share with a saint in acts of service. The world misunderstands a saint. Some expect him to live and act according to a standard which they have set up. They criticize, dictate, and find fault with him because he does not fit into a mold prepared by them. The ways of a saint are mysterious. He is a glorious embodiment of divinity, shedding light and grace on all who come in contact with him. The saint is no doubt all-powerful because he is a vehicle through whom the divine Shakti reveals itself. Still in the task of uplifting mankind and bringing unity and harmony in the world, he invites help and cooperation of all aspirants and devotees who have faith in and love for him. The great masters and teachers of the world, past and present, are shining examples. Krishna fought against forces of darkness with the help of his intimate devotees and friends. Buddha preached his religion of ahimsa and in emancipation with the aid of his innumerable disciples. Jesus Christ carried the light of his gospel of love to all the nations on the earth through his faithful followers. Rama conquered the great Asura, who was a source of terror in all peace-loving people of the time, assisted by monkeys who were devoted to him. Instances of this kind can be multiplied. It must be considered that when God affords us an opportunity to be of service to a saint, we are really blessed. Life is worth living when all its powers are at his feet. Intellect often misguides, but the heart awakened to divine love is a true counselor. A saint's dependence upon God is always entire. God protects him and provides him with all the materials to carry out his mission through human agents. Whenever a saint receives any assistance from any quarter, he takes it as coming from his eternal beloved. All his transactions are with him. He is the giver and he is the receiver. When people take part in any task which a saint undertakes, they do so for their own material or spiritual advancement. They do not grasp this and think they are all important and nothing would happen without them. They forget that God, by his inscrutable methods, carries out his will through his prepared human instruments on this earth. Man, in his conceit, thinks that he is the doer. He is wise and that his ideas are correct, however narrow and imperfect they may be. It has become a vogue with many so-called spiritual aspirants to go on visits to saints, not to draw light and inspiration for their upward progress, but to compare and judge them. They think they are very clever, but their cleverness is nothing before the magnificent glory of saints who shine by their own light and are the benefactors of humanity. Therefore, let the spiritual aspirant honor saints, serve them selflessly, entitle themselves to their grace, and thus illuminate their lives with divine splendor, rise to the stature of sainthood. I'm going to read that again. Entitle themselves to their grace, and thus illuminating their lives with divine splendor, rise to the stature of sainthood. There are two ways by which a spiritual aspirant can awaken and purify his heart for the realization of God within and without him. The first is a society of saints, and the second, repetition of the holy name of God. It is in the company of a saint that the aspirant becomes conscious of the existence of God and a yearning to attain him, is created in his heart. This contact also grants him a foretaste of the divine bliss born of such an arrangement, born of such attainment. Just as a lotus blooms in the rays of the morning sun, so the aspirant's heart opens and receives the subtle influence which a saint exerts on him, giving him the experience of immortal peace and joy. Moreover, the saint's contact slackens the aspirant's attachment to the objects of the senses, thus enabling him to easily concentrate his mind upon the indwelling divinity. So it is essential for the aspirant to seek the company of a saint and bask in the sunshine of his grace. That was certainly my experience of meeting David, that he loosened the grip of the world on me and created that desire to attain him in my heart. I knew it was what I was looking for. And when I met David, he was able to provide those things to me. As the mind has been allowed to roam about, as it is liked for a long, long time, to curb its nature and to engage it in continuous remembrance of God becomes, in the early stages of the aspirant struggle, extremely difficult. In spite of the aspirant's possessing a spirit of dispassion toward the attractions of life, his mind refuses to be easily guided toward the eternal reality, who is the source of the world and all creatures in it. Hence the adoption of a method of steady discipline for achieving concentration is necessary. This is the mother's simple, keep your mind on God. But how do we do it? The sovereign way for the aspirant is to take to the repetition of the powerful name of God with all faith and devotion. God's name is invincible. The name is the bestower of peace, power, and knowledge. It can remove all the impurities of the heart and fill it with the joy and radiance divine. Very few seem to know the greatness of the divine name. The wonders that the name can work are realized only by those who have made proper use of it. The troubled mind gets peace and rest by taking refuge in the name. The weakened and the diseased mind regains its strength and health by the chanting of the name. The mind in which sweep the blasts of unbridled passions can be freed from them by the power of the name. The soul whose vision is clouded by ignorance can be made aware of God, who is existence, consciousness, and bliss, through the constant utterance of the name. In short, victory over the lower nature and perfection of the higher spiritual life can be gained by the aspirant's unwavering reliance on God's name. A man's life, however high-paced it may be from the material or worldly standpoint, is far away from real peace and happiness. The soul can be released from its misery only by living in the divine consciousness. Man's desire for sense pleasures casts a veil over him, denying him of the joy of his union with the divine. It is for this reason that he lives like an animal, only to fulfill the cravings of his lower nature. His association with the body and the senses is the cause of his sorrow and bondage. When he directs his vision inward and communes with the immortal self and beholds the world about him and all creatures and things in it as expressions of the self, it is then that he achieves the supreme fruition of human life. Now he becomes a pure, exalted, and illumined vehicle of God, through whom rays of all-embracing love and beneficence spread everywhere in the world. In this state, he feels a rare perennial joy by giving himself away for the good of others. Keeping in view the sublime goal described above, the aspirant should strive with all of his heart to reach it by drawing inspiration from the contact of saints and chanting God's glorious name. Let's put this into practice. And instead of doing Ram Nam tonight, I'd like us to practice Hong Sao. And Hong Sao is the same as I am, or I am that I am. When we chant Hong Sao, we begin by noticing the breath. We don't start with the chanting. So we notice the inhalation and the exhalation of the breath. We don't want to alter that. We just want to notice it. On the next inhalation, I'm going to chant Hong. And as the breath goes out, Sa. You can think about it almost like snoring, which sounds a little irreverent, but we know how the sound of snoring goes with the breath. And so on your own breath, it's Hong Sa. Hong Sa. And start with it out loud first, and then take it internal. Hong Sa. You may notice that the breath becomes slower and shallower. If you're used to practicing yoga in a hatha yoga kind of way, they'll talk about deepening your breath. That's not what we're trying to do. So. As we know, the breath is what connects the body to the spirit. And even when the chanting is done strictly in the mind, the vibration connects to the spirit. It is said that name and God are one. Through the name, we call God and God hears us. Call the name of a loved one, they come. And our mind is on nothing else at that instant. God is not different than that. Let's practice Hong Sa for a few minutes. If you notice tightness anywhere, just allow that to release. Taking one or two more breaths, bring your attention back. Questions about Hong Sa? Or comments about using that breathing mantra?
I found my pace of breath was shorter than what you were demonstrating. Do you just go with what you tend to, or are you trying to extend them?
You definitely want to just go with what your breath is doing. So the breath is the driver, and you add the word to your breathing. Why don't you try that a couple of times and see?
It feels very natural. It just, I was noticing I was on a very different rhythm than you, so I just was clarifying.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, we have a tendency to want to change the breath when we're doing Hong Sa. It's very common to try and draw it out or alter our breathing pattern. And what we want to do is just breathe naturally and add the Hong Sa to the breath. Any other questions or comments about Hong Sa? I know we've all been practicing it for years. But maybe not. We've all learned it years ago, whether or not we've been practicing it. Also from Papa, and these readings are from the Divine Life. The quest for world peace, and I'll say this is why it's so important for us to practice these techniques that bring us calmness, peace, and connection to God, not only for our own realization, but for the upliftment of mankind. And in particular, if you're feeling that the world is not as it should be, these techniques lift us above what's happening in the moment and give us a greater lens. And so this is from Papa about the quest for world peace. People are busy finding out ways and means to bring about peace in the world. So many conferences are being held and pacts are being entered into. Still, the situation remains more or less the same. Then where is the way out of the difficulties that confront us? Everybody seeks to solve the problems, but there is no solution found. We are in despair and getting nervous. Intense fear has seized us. That does not help matters. We do not know what to do in order to bring peace and goodwill in the world. The fights, wars, and discord in the world have no high purpose, aiming as they do only as ephemeral power, wealth, and glory. The material achievements appear and dissolve like bubbles on the surface of the ocean. We strive to catch them, and for a moment they seem to be in our grasp, but the next minute they vanish and turn to nothing. Peace is our quest. It is in the hunger of our soul. But that peace can be had only by uniting ourselves with the supreme truth pervading everywhere. We are fighting to put down others and think that by doing this, we will be happy and peaceful. History also goes to show that from time immemorial, fights and wars have been waged for world domination with the ostensible object of establishing peace and harmony in the world. It is indeed an irony that people should fight in the name of peace. Real peace can be got only by going within ourselves and by finding the great reality. God, the great reality, God. The quest must be turned inward. But what the politicians are doing is they're trying to patch up differences on the surface. They cannot achieve lasting success by such methods, and naturally there will be clashes again and again. All of them talk of peace at the same time preparing for war. If we find the truth within us, we know that all this talk of peace and harmony in the world, by adjustment of differences on the surface, through conferences and pacts, goes only to show the depth of our ignorance. We are coining new formula to convince each other, but without true conviction. The result is failure and confusion all around, bringing misery to the world. There is only one way out of the impasse. That is for every individual to realize the great truth that underlies the entire universe and thereby establish true harmony and goodwill on this distracted earth. Peace is within us. It is in the self, the Atman, which the Upanishads declare is full of peace and is immortal. So we should set about realizing the divine within our hearts and spread the glory of God everywhere and shed on all the people who come in contact with us the light which we have gained for ourselves. We can thereby create a truly peaceful atmosphere in and around us, which will scatter the war clouds that hang over us. As a preparation for this great task, we must rid our hearts of all hatred so that God's light may shine in them and waves of divine love may rise and spread over the world. I'm going to pause here. I just want people to open their hearts in this moment. To the people, to the situations in particular, that you felt anger, hatred. People are doing things that many of us don't agree with. Things are happening in the world that don't seem right for God to allow to happen. And does anger and fear grip our hearts in these situations? Does hatred come upon us? If we truly open our hearts, it cannot. God cannot coexist with that. If we've allowed God to make our love his home, there's no space for hatred. Righteous anger may appear, but hatred is nowhere to be found. I'd like to have us practice the clearing breath at the heart center. This is a way to open our hearts. Somewhat mechanical, which is kind of a beautiful, magical thing, because we think we have to go through years of therapy to mend our broken hearts. But in reality, we can just bring God's spirit into that, into our heart center. And so those who were at the retreat, we practiced this, and those who weren't. What I want you to do is focus on your heart center. And it's in the middle of the chest, between the breastbone. And with the breath, allow that area to warm. And as you breathe in and the chest expands, allow the heart center to expand with that breath. And as you breathe out, they contract. So breathe in and the chest expands. And the heart center softens and expands. And as you breathe out, they all contract slightly. And with each contraction, allow whatever bands, whatever tightness there is around the heart to soften. And then with the inhale and the expansion, it creates more space and expands, just like a balloon. So as you inhale, the heart center opens, and as you exhale, it slightly contracts. Opening, contracting, softening with each breath. Feel the energy flowing in through the medulla and the back of the spine. Flowing into the heart center. You're not feeling anything. Just start with the breath. The rising of the chest with the inhalation. Falling of the chest with the exhalation. And start to notice that place in your chest that feels warm and focused. There's a place between, if you imagine between the scapula, you put your shoulder blades together. There's a spot in that place, but in the center of your chest. Start to notice that area. You feel that it's a little warmer, a little more dense. That's the heart chakra. For many, many, many years, that place in my heart felt tight, like the tightest knot bound up. With many years of work, it opened. It became a permeable place for God's light to flow through. And so if it doesn't want to breathe, just allow it to feel the warmth. Invite it to expand slightly with each breath. When we do this work with the heart chakra, some of the times we'll notice that the energy has moved to the throat chakra. So if that's the case and there's pressure there, It's okay to shift to that center and do the same clearing. So as I read, just keep the heart center open with that, with the clearing breath. There is only one way out of the impasse. That is for every individual to realize the great truth that underlies the entire universe and thereby establish true harmony and goodwill on this distracted earth. Peace is within us. It is in the self, the Atman, which, as the Upanishads declare, is full of peace and is immortal. So we should set about realizing the divine within our hearts and spread the glory of God everywhere, and shed on all the people who come in contact with us the light which we have gained for ourselves. We can thereby create a truly peaceful atmosphere in and around us, which will scatter the war clouds that hang over us. As the preparation for this great task, we must rid our hearts of all hatred, so that God's light may shine in them, and waves of divine love may rise and spread over the world. The love will enable the current of peace to pass from heart to heart and spread a peace atmosphere all over the globe and make wars and strife impossible. Some may contend that the war mentality is created by a few politicians or by a small set of people, the imperialists or the materialists, militarists, and that the great population are not really in favor of war and are not responsible for it. But this is not true. Each one of us is responsible for the war mentality. So long as there is hate and wrath in our hearts, we directly or indirectly help to produce this war mentality. We are also responsible for electing, as our representatives in our respective parliaments, those who believe in war and who are ready to support their leaders when they enter into war. If we keep our mind calm and peaceful in the contemplation of God within us and learn to love one another, these very persons who now want to wage war will disarm themselves, and the war idea will entirely disappear from the mind of man. So we must individually and jointly try to produce a peace atmosphere. Each individual must do what lies in his power to create the atmosphere for peace and harmony in the world. Because individuals make up humanity, so the responsibility lies on the shoulders of every one of us, both for war and peace. We cannot blame anybody else. We find now there's a cold war going on in the world, a war of nerves. Even the peace-loving people are getting affected by this. So we as individuals must first create an atmosphere, and then a collective effort should also be made for putting down this war mentality and spreading love and goodwill on earth. There is another weakness in us which breeds the war mentality. It is the fear complex. We have become prey to fear. Death holds terror for us. This is because we think we are merely physical bodies subject to birth, growth, decay, and death. To shed this fear, we must realize that we are immortal, and that even if the body perishes, we are not going to perish. Only when fear leaves our hearts, we shall remain in peace. Otherwise, we shall distrust others and hate them. Fear causes agitation in our minds, and we become restless. We invite mishaps, calamities, and catastrophes, all from fear. Our body consciousness has become so firm through fear that to take the mind off the body and fix it on the divine within us is very difficult. We must give up fear, knowing full well that by death of the body, we do not die. Therefore, let us realize that death is to the body and not to the spirit within us. A man has really attuned himself with God, is not at all afraid of death. So it is incumbent on every one of us to be free from the fear of death. This fear contributes a good lot to the present agitated condition of the world. It adds fuel to the fire, as it were, because fear and hate go together. Where there is hate, there is fear, and where there is fear, there is hate. Both are born of the sense of diversity and separateness. If we talk about love, we must first practice it ourselves. If God has given us the power to love others as we love ourselves, then we should bring out that power. Unless we see the divine everywhere and can look upon all as our own self, we have no right to speak about love. Our love must be such as to transform those who come into contact with us. Preaching is not always necessary nor successful. There is a better way by which we can commune with and seek relationship with another. It is by recognizing the kinship of the Spirit. If we transmit this universal love from person to person, country to country, and nation to nation, then we shall be able to create what is called world brotherhood. This is essential to stem the tide of our war that threatens to overwhelm us. So individuals should first try to find peace within themselves. Then all such individuals in all parts of the world should jointly try to bring peace by spreading the message of peace. Though the entire humanity may not join, let a small percentage of it at least take part in this. It will gradually transform others who are not at present in favor of the movement. Man's nature is developed according to the influence of the company he keeps. If we are true to God within us and love our fellow beings equally, by our contact, they will also be inspired to do likewise. In this way, we shall be able to start a current of universal peace and love, which will steadily neutralize the antagonistic forces of discord, strife, and war. Those engaged in the movement must, above all, remember that peace cannot be established unless humanity is freed from the clutches of pride, greed, and hate that make for international warfare, both economic and political. Mere negative methods of combating the specter of international wars and strife should give place to positive methods of work. There is need for mobilizing along constructive channels all the available spiritual forces derived from outstanding men of high spiritual attainment and creating thereby a widespread atmosphere of harmony and goodwill in which wars would be rendered impossible. India's greatness lies in her unique contribution to the world of the things of the spirit for the regeneration of mankind. Even in her present impoverished state, she has not neglected to realize the splendor of the soul. That is her spiritual heritage handed down to us by ancient saints and sages. She has stood always more for the riches of the spirit than for mere material power and wealth. The need of the present age is coordination of work on the material and spiritual planes so as to produce an all-around divine revelation. Purely political ideals not based on the firm foundation of the spirit are of no value in solving the problems of life. And so we use everything we've been taught to bring ourselves into states of peace. In particular, when we go out into the world, we seek to radiate that peace, that love, that spirit of God through us, So each person we come into contact with is changed. Now the bonus of this is we can't radiate God and God's light to others unless it's flowing through us. And so we are doubly blessed. Because as we give, so shall we receive. And so when we radiate God's light and love in the world, God fills us to overflowing so we can continue that work. And that divinity becomes the greatest joy we can experience. The greatest peace and the end of fear. Can you imagine living a life without fear? When we feel that fear come upon us, we can allow it to blow off just like an umbrella caught by the wind. We let our grip of it go. We can feel it weighing down on our shoulders, around the head, and just imagine it loosening and being caught in the wind and lifting off. Taken away from us forever. As we think of fear, you'll notice that things start to constrict. I'm sure as I was reading, I was bringing thoughts to people's minds of the things that are happening, things that could happen. And we start to contract. The medulla contracts. The consciousness tightens in on the skull. We have less resources when we allow our ego to do that. It's trying to armor itself against the world and against everything that's out there. And our job is to open ourselves up, to release those shackles, to cast off that armor and allow God to flow in. We have tools when we feel constricted. You can do the 20-part body tightening to a low, starting at the feet and working up our legs. Tighten all the body parts. Constricting to the count of 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We release and feel the energy of God flowing into us at the medulla, rushing into our body, filling the heart center, filling the mind. expanding our consciousness. And in so doing, we release the fear, which opens the door to God. Any questions about anything or comments on these readings? The thoughts coming to you, it's probably God that's put it there. So it would be wrong not to ask it or share it.
Think often of the world upheavals that Swami Ramdas witnessed.
Yeah.
And that helps me put in scale how things I think are going so poorly to dial back to what those times must have been like and for him to still stay above it all.
Yeah.
Very. Want to say enlightening, but also just builds enthusiasm. You just feel buoyed up with his optimism, so to speak.
Yeah.
Open that channel to God.
And you think about Papa and how people related to him as God come to earth. So he was really able to be God's voice on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is how God's seeing it.
I had a question about the kind of mechanics of the breathing.
Yeah.
And I found that helpful to just mechanically try to push my scapula or my shoulder blades together and how much that opened my chest, so to speak, but if I tried to hold it, it got in the way of natural breathing. But it was a nice stretch, so to speak.
For those who know the Superman stretch where you put, I'm going to just do this so people can see. The Superman stretch is you put your hands here, and then pull the arms back and the chest, and that will naturally open the chest. And so if you have a hard time with when you start to do breathing exercises, even if it's to keep the breath natural, if you start with that, it will help to open the chest, which makes breathing more comfortable and easy. Any other questions or comments?
Well, I'm optimistic about the future.
Yeah.
But at this particular time, I have an infection in my throat, and so I appreciated working on the throat chakra, Jill, and everything you said was just so perfect for right now. So thank you.
Well, I'll finish with this reading from David. This is from the book that Ruth put together called Silence. And it's June 16th, 2001. This evening from 7:30 to 9, I had a supernal visit from Mother and Master. I was looking out the window, seated in my chair. It's the window above Mother and Master's images. With eyes open, I saw Mother at the window as if she had walked up the steps and looked inside. It was not seeing with these two physical eyes, but with a third eye. I could see there were others with her, but there was only a sense that they were param gurus, as if they had come for a visit. The thought came, how thrilling it would be if that really happened, and then thinking, would I talk? And I knew I would keep my vow. Thinking in this manner, a strong thought came to me. They are here. Again, I saw Mother out the window. I focused on my third eye with the two physical eyes yet open, and there she was. Oh, what bliss to bow at those feet. I needed to settle my mind a bit to have a clear connection. If I had too much mental excitement, my mental warrior would become jumpy. What joy, what mirth she has. When she laughs, I feel it in my own belly like rippling water. I asked her about many things. She confirmed all my experience, including the Alpha Centurions. She indicated it was my advancement here in silence that made the connection possible, as well as my connection with her now. She said as long as I was in harmony with myself, she was happy. And that's the capital S. She also confirmed that she had sent Carla to me and she had sanctioned the marriage. I seemed to be anxious about mistakes I made. She reiterated that when I am in harmony with the self, she is happy. I sensed there was someone with her. It was Master. At first, I could only see the hem of his orange robe and his deerskin shoes. He was so vast. I wondered whether I would be able to see him. And then he assumed a normal size again. A normal size. Again, I had to work to make my mind still. So I closed my eyes to help me focus to see him clearly. I asked him many questions. He confirmed I had his sanction to initiate others into Kriya. He had given Mother that sanction, and she had given it to me. He was pleased. He said that the organization had made mistakes, but it was necessary to reform it, and it had played an important function. He showed me his autobiography and all they did, and indeed I could see all the good. In their present forms, Mother and Master are pure joy, and the little bumps of the world are very little to them. Indeed, although their compassion is there and clarity of thought is there, they are focused and are bringing others into that joy. When that joy erupts, as it often does, it starts to vibrate in the belly and goes out from them, resonating in the belly region of all others. It is delightful and spontaneous. Quite hard to describe, but a unique experience. Oh, the joy of these moments. Occasionally I thought, they're going now, but they seem quite leisurely in their visit. Mother was quietly on my left side and Master was right in front. At a few times I directed myself to Mother, but she seemed to fade when I focused on her. And when I focused on Master, he was very clear. I got the message that with Master being there, he was to be my focus. They both were very reassuring to me. I was to keep my mind on God, and all would be well. I felt so insignificant before them. But then I straightened myself up and came into my full self, and the whole picture came into much clearer focus. It was clear to me they did not need nor want me to assume an inferior position. My love and respect are automatic, and I had no temptation to be overly familiar with either one of them, so everything went on smoothly. Overall, I felt them reassuring me on every major point and encouraging me to continue. I asked Master about Swamiji, who instantly came into the picture. And Master said he liked him very much. I asked about Sai Baba and said I felt some reservation. And Master said to listen to my intuition. Just now, as I was writing, my solar plexus was becoming very painful, and I had to set down my pen and go inside. Master wanted to give me a blessing. He said, as I initiated, so do thou initiate. And he put his thumb on my third eye point. I spent some time absorbed in his blessing, about the last hour. I asked about Kriya, and he assured me that what he had was more than enough. And we knew the power of Guru Shakti, my words. He was just showing it to me. I asked whether to go into the other Kriyas or initiate others into them. He looked into the distance for a while and said, there may be occasion in the future. I asked about my current Kriya, that I am too full already and can't do more. And he said that was fine, and I was being shown alternatives by Babaji. I asked about the painful, difficult time I had in all the spiritual experiences I have undergone, and if I was doing something wrong. He said, no, that was the path I chose, and I was helping others by going that way. He showed me individuals who have advanced as a result. I said, I thought those who advanced were due to Mother's great sacrifice. He beamed and said that she had helped the whole world, and the fall of communism came to my mind. I said, she suffered so. He said he had been there. He knew, but the benefits to the world were great. So many answers, so much joy. What perspective, wisdom, and bliss. My cup runneth over. What blessings pour upon my head. I feel baptized in their Holy Spirit, the body sanctified, if not just a little worn out. Mother, Master, Infinite Spirit and Papa, dancing in delight. Amen. Let's have our closing prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Peace. Bliss. Amen. I'm going to end, instead of playing music, I'm going to end with David telling, well, here it is.
I remember one time having this image of something that God gave to me, of somebody who is a total baseball nut, loves baseball, lives, breathes, eats everything, and how exciting it would be for him to be involved with say, the high school team, the local high school team, and just gets to somehow as maybe assistant coach or something like that, or a manager, and is out there, and just how fun that is and how exciting it is. And then suddenly he's somehow magically transferred to the World Series, and he gets to carry water for the best baseball players in the world. And just how unbelievably thrilling that would be for, and the crowd and the yard and everything that's going on, sights, smells, everything. And I thought, that's what it's like to be with our guru lineage. Mm-hmm. From Babaji and Jesus to Lari Mahashay to Sri Yukteswar to Master to Mother. Wow. This is an all-star team. You know, this is not an average... an average team at all, you know, and I just, what a privilege just to get to carry some water for them, you know, just to walk on the same ground. I was reading on Sunday about Master Mahashay and how much Master loved being with him. And he says, he was the first friend, I just felt privileged to walk on the same ground that he walked on. And I know that feeling, you know, it's just, yeah. And it's not, oh, I'm small and insignificant from a, you know, pounding myself yeah. down kind of, it's just a genuine recognition of what spiritual giants these yeah. folks are. Yeah. And how, what a privilege it is. What if we ever are on the periphery of their minds, mm. you know, that Babaji would ever think of us, or Jesus, or Master or Mother, you know, just for us to be a flash in their mind, just what a blessing that would be and how privileged we would be to have that. And that's the kind of feelings that come to me with what you're describing there. Mm-hmm. I may have mentioned before, but the dialogue that I had with God when I was thinking of Babaji and Jesus and how they must look down on us, and we're these tiny little ants that making these pathetic little trials of meditation, and we're, you know, just they must just think, oh man, just, you know, not even beneath notice. And God said, no. He says, it's not that way. He said, every one of these spiritual giants, they have been where you are at. They sat down to meditate, and their mind was like wild horses racing in every direction, going light speed. They know all the different trials that we come up against. They know them all because they faced them all. They may not have had computers, they may not have had televisions, but human problems have not changed that much. They, when they think of you, they look out through your eyes, through your mind, through your experience. They know you intimately. They know even more than just yourself in a human sense. They know what you will become. They see the story completed. For however long it takes to get there, they see you coming in, and they see that greatness of God within you because it's within us all. And so they see more of you than you know yourself. And it was a real eye-opener that, my goodness, that they could look out and they know my experience intimately. And I don't have to be ashamed. I don't have to try to hide. None of that. I just need to try to make spiritual progress while I'm here and do my best. But they're rooting for me and they know me intimately. And when I fall short of the goal, they know how painful that was for them. They know how painful it is for me. And they're rooting for me. And they see that ultimate one that I will become one day. And how comforting that was. And how connecting. I felt so much more connected then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wonderful.
Hari Om.
Hari Om.
Hari Om.
Hariom. Hariom.